All right, we're going to start with the set-aside prayer. God, set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth and see your truth and experience new truth. God, help me carry your message today. Amen. Okay, now we started to wives last week. Somebody said it was good. No? All right, nobody remembers. I just want to read one line again on page 104. It says, we want to leave you with the feeling that no situation is too difficult and no unhappiness too great to be overcome. I think that's a really powerful statement, and it is true. And Mickey talked about that today, and I wrote, with God. With God, there's no situation that's too difficult, no unhappiness too great to overcome. And that's really a message of hope, that line, and it's a true statement. For those who do it, we were on page 108. The thing about to wives is, to me, having decided for years that we didn't need to do it at the meeting and then changing my mind, after somebody suggested it, we've been doing it the last 5 or 8 years, whatever. This is really a chapter to alcoholics on what we look like, how we affect other people, what our disease looks like, what is our disease. And there are a lot of spiritual principles in this chapter, which we're going to be looking at today. What we're going to cover today is they talk about not a description of the alcoholic, but how alcoholic, the phases of alcoholism. There are four phases they talk about. That's what I call it, the phases. Where is your alcoholic at this point, or where were you when you came in here, or where are you today? And then it's going to talk about the principles of success in working with an alcoholic. So it's great stuff. It says on page 108, try not to condemn your husband, alcoholic husband, no matter what he says or does. How are you doing with that? Try not to condemn anyone. Remember, tolerance and consideration is our code. He is just another very sick, unreasonable person. Now, that's a really interesting line, because we like to think we're the most important thing in the whole world. But we're just another sick, unreasonable person. We're not even special in that regard. Does that make sense? We're just sick, unreasonable people. Do you know sick, unreasonable people who aren't in AA? Yeah, a lot of them. Turn on the TV. And, you know, but we have a solution. We don't have to be sick and unreasonable anymore. Isn't it great? Treat him when you can as though he had pneumonia. Remember, we talk about on 66, 67, they're spiritually ill. Treat them with love, tolerance, and patience that you would for a sick friend. People who are sick from self-centeredness, they're separated from God. And when he angers you, remember that he is very ill. Is anybody here in a relationship at all? If you are, if you get angered by whoever you're in a relationship, just say the prayers on 66, 67 before you open your mouth. And before you respond, then I'll tell you, it works a lot better. Those are the prayers if you get angry or bothered by someone. It says there, now here they give an important exception to the foregoing. There's some people who are thoroughly bad intention, that no amount of patience will make any difference. They're just... An alcoholic of this temperament may be quick to see this chapter as a club over your head. Alcoholics like to beat people over the head with information and tell them they're not doing it right and look at this. And don't let them get away with it. I like that. If you're a positive, is one of this type, you may feel you had better leave. Is it right to let them ruin your life and the lives of your children? Someone that you just can't deal with. They're impossible to deal with and live with. And sometimes it's not even safe. Is it right to let him ruin your life and the lives of your children? Especially, here's the key line, when he has before him a way to stop his drinking and abuse, if he really wants to pay the price. So what does it cost to come in here? Do we charge? Is it like treatment, $8,000. You give them $8,000 and you get a month. But what's the price we pay here? Destruction of our self-centeredness. Destruction of our self-centeredness and living a life connected with God. Giving up on ourselves, right, in our way, in our rock, in our plans, and that's hard. The problem which you struggle, so they talk about the problem falls within one of four categories. Your husband may be a heavy drinker. His drinking may be constant or may be heavy only on certain occasions. Perhaps he spends too much money for liquor. It may be slowing him up mentally and physically, but I like this line, he does not see it. Any of you remember when you were there? Probably can't remember, you couldn't see it. Sometimes he is a source of embarrassment to you and his friends. Here's a good one. He is positive he can handle his liquor, that it does him no harm. Isn't that denial? I like this. Drinking is necessary in his business. We can justify our behavior. There's no limits to our justification. He would probably be insulted. We get insulted a lot if he were called an alcoholic. This world is full of people like him. Some will moderate or stop altogether, and some will not. Of those who keep on, a good number will become true alcoholics after a while. Now, remember they talk about the heavy drinker in the big book. The heavy drinker can stop if given sufficient reason to do so. He doesn't have a spiritual illness that requires a spiritual experience. So when do you become a true alcoholic? When you lose choice and control, when you lose the power of choice not to drink. When you've lost the power of choice, then you have no power. And then you need a spiritual experience, right, to keep you from drinking. Now, what were you doing when you lost the power of the choice? You see, you can't remember. Probably drank right through it. And so it's that point when you realize you don't have a choice. A lot of alcoholics have lost the power of choice long before they realize it, and some never realize it. The second one is your husband is showing lack of control. And here they use the word control, for he's unable to stay in the water wagon even when he wants to. So they're talking about control being the choice of not to drink. And then they talk about he gets entirely out of hand when drinking. Anybody remember those days? Anybody there today? He admits this is true, but here's why he doesn't get better. He's positive that he will do better. See, as long as alcoholics think they're going to be able to do better, they can't do it. Why? Because we had moral and philosophical conviction score, remember? And we had lack of power, was it there? Can we do better on our own? Anybody try to do better? Anybody try to go to work and not get upset? Be kind and loving to everybody. You know, nobody's going to bother you. It's 9 o'clock. You say the prayer. You get out of the car 10:30. It's like they're all ganging up on you. And, I mean, you did the best you could. It says the needed power wasn't there, remember? He has begun to try with or without your cooperation various means of moderating or staying dry. So he has a plan. He has a plan, and he's positive he can do it. Maybe beginning to lose his friends. His business may suffer. The people are staying away from him. He is worried at times and is becoming aware that he cannot drink like other people. He sometimes drinks in the morning and through the day also to hold his nervousness in check. Why do alcoholics get nervous? Because they're alive. They're breathing. We worry about everything. That's our nature. Our nature is to worry and be irritable. And why do we worry? Because we're relying on self. It's the water we swim in. I've had people I work with, they say, oh, I've never, ever get afraid. I mean, I think they mean it, but they don't realize that their whole life is full of anxiety. Did anybody have that before you drank? And then you drank and it just went away. It was so wonderful. I can't remember the first time I had that Manischewitz wine when I was 13. I felt great. I said, where is this stuff? And then I had the allergy because I kept going upstairs. Anybody remember that? First time you had a drink? And then I remember when I had beer, because you know I was a very sheltered life. And I was at Duke, and I was only 17, and they had a pitcher, and I drank the glass, and I said, boy, this stuff's pretty bad, you know. Really, pretty bad. I have another one. Anybody remember that? And then that night, I was introduced to the toilet bowl. And then I couldn't wait for the next weekend. We used to ship the babes in, because we were freshmen. None of the girls at Duke would go out with us. So we used to bus in the girls' college, and we would get a keg. And I was really looking forward to it. Does that sound like alcoholism? Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. I got off topic here. But when he gets over the spree, he begins to think once more, which is dangerous. See, when alcoholics are thinking, they're in trouble. How he can drink moderately next time, you see, he's not ready to give up. We think this person is in danger. He is. He has the earmarks of a real alcoholic. So what is it going to take for him to wake up one day and hit bottom spiritually? You see, we don't know. That's why everybody who comes here, you've been given a gift, a precious gift. And we hope you take advantage of it. Perhaps he can tend to business very well. His no means ruin everything. As we say among ourselves, he wants to want to stop. That's in italics. That's what Dr. Bob said. He wanted to want to stop, but he couldn't do it. Now here's husband three. He's gone much further, husband two. Though like number two, he becomes worse. His friends are slipping away. His home is a near wreck. He cannot hold the position. I was thinking about it today. It's different today than it was in 1938 when they wrote the book. People had families. They tended to stay together. Divorce was very uncommon. Women didn't work. People were poor. And they had to stay together to live. It was a bad time. If 1935 to 38, 9, our country was coming out of depression, but very slowly, very slowly. And in fact, if you see the movie Cinderella Man, it's a really good movie, but they have a scene of Central Park in May of 1935, which was when AA was founded, of Central Park was where people lived, and they just lived in the park in shacks. And they were just decimated. They didn't have any place to live. They didn't have jobs. It was a different world. And you see the world that was existed when AA came into place. He says he does not see why he can drink with other people. Isn't that sad? Clings to the notion that we yet find a way to do so. So he hasn't gotten to page 30 yet, which I think is we must fully concede to our innermost selves the first step of recovery, that we're an alcoholic. The idea that we can be like other people has to be smashed. We can't drink. Right, Ed? Yep. Ed came here because he didn't want to drink, because he knew if he drank, he was in deep doo-doo. And that's the deal. He cannot drink. Do you remember that today? Do you know that today? Now, there are people who absolutely know that, and then they drink an hour later because their mind forgets. And that's why we need a spiritual experience to treat this illness, because our mind won't tell us it's a bad idea right before we drink if we're left on our own. He may come to the point where he desperately wants to stop, but he cannot. Why can't he not? Because he has no power. It says you can be hopeful of this situation like this. Why? The book. This book is about people who had a hopeless and futile disease of mind and body. Right? Hopeless condition of mind and body. But yet they got better. They wrote this book. So there's really no one. We read the line, there's no situation or any, none of us have sunk too low to recover. Now here's number four. This is someone you could completely despair. He's in an institution after another, violent, insane, drinks on the way home from the hospital, drinking on the way home. And probably swore that morning to the staff he wouldn't drink. I remember when I was in the hospital, they were always so excited when the alcoholic with cirrhosis and his MS told them that he wasn't going to drink. They put in the chart. You know, they were so happy because that takes him off the hook. He's not going to drink anymore. But of course, I knew that there was no really almost no chance of that. They don't understand it. Perhaps he had DTs, doctors shake their head, advise you to have him committed. Remember, this was Bill W. They were talking outside his hotel room, his hospital room. The Dr. Silkworth and his wife and Dr. Silkworth said, you're going to have to lock him up. He's going to go insane. There's no hope for this man. So he heard them, and then he took the first step. He said, no words can describe, you know, the bitter morass of self-pity. I was surrounded by quicksand. Alcohol was my master. So here he's sitting there and he's thinking he's going to die and what he did to his wife, and yet he helped write this book with God. How'd that happen? It says, doctors may shake their heads and advise you to have them committed. This picture may not be as dark as it looks. Many of our husbands were just as far gone, yet they got well. And so there's really no level that you can't recover from if you give up completely. If you really, really give up completely and ask God to help you, then and you're open, ready to hear, like Mickey said, God will put people in your life. If you're really ready, you'll reach out, you'll seek something, and they'll start coming in your life. Everybody's sober. Look back at your first weeks. What happened to you? Who talked to you? How do you interact with people and get the message? It's you couldn't have predicted it. Remember, when you look back, the things that happened when you put yourself in God's hands were better than anything you could have believed. Mickey didn't wake up that morning and want to have people come at 7 o'clock for coffee, right? No. But it just happened. Something clicked. Something clicked, and that's God. So now they're going to go back to husband number one. He's difficult to deal with. He enjoys his drinking. It stirs his imagination. He feels better to people. Perhaps you enjoy drinking with him. You like to go to parties. Liquor's a social lubricant. It says, some of us think it has advantage when reasonably used. All right, so they say, here's how you deal with alcoholics. The first principle of success is that you should never be angry. Well, that's good, but that's hard to do, isn't it? But that's, you can't be angry at an alcoholic. Why? Because he's spiritually ill. That's why those pages on 66, 67, Freedom from Anger, they're all spiritually ill. So here's the problem. I don't want to get angry because it changes me and I lose my relationship with God. Because of someone else. And so we have to do that in all areas of our life, don't we? Even though your husband becomes unbearable and you have to leave him temporarily, you should, if you can, go without bitterness. Patience and good temper are most necessary. So they're giving you principles. Don't be angry. If you go, go without rancor. Patience and good temper are necessary. And here's the next thought, is that you should never tell what he must do about his drinking. Why? It's not going to do any good anyway. It's just going to make him angry. Have you ever worked with somebody who has a resentment or known somebody with a resentment and you try to tell them that maybe they need to let go of it? You just get on their list. You just might as well get on their list. Here you go. Oh yeah, I have a lot of people that resent me because I ask them to do things that they don't want to do and I'm unreasonable and I make the list. That's okay. If he gets the idea that you're a nagger, a killjoy, your chances of accomplishing anything useful may be zero. And it's hard not to nag or killjoy when it's a serious situation in your life. He will use that as an excuse to drink more. He will tell you he is misunderstood. Have you ever met an alcoholic come in here who was misunderstood? Well, they were, and they give you the people who misunderstood them and how they were evil and mean and they should be executed. And he wasn't misunderstood. People understood him pretty well. He was self-centered, and he couldn't see it. This may lead to lonely evenings for you. He may seek someone else to console him, not always another man. So when we get into self-pity, we want people to find who justify us. And you can see it in AA, people who call different people to give what's on their mind till they find the person who agrees with them. And because we don't want to really look at the truth, we want vindication or verification of our thinking. That's why sometimes you have to not be a people pleaser and tell them, you know, how you see it. And if they don't like it, that's fine. You have no control over that. But that's why you need somebody that you trust, that you're honest with, that can be honest with you. Be determined that your husband's drinking is not going to spoil your relations with your children or your friends. Now here's another point. Only I can spoil my relations with my children and other people. I'm the only one who can do it. And he's talking, they need your kids and your friends need your companionship. and it is possible to have a full and useful life though your husband continues to drink. See where Al-Anon came out of all this chapter, and it's changed the world. You can have a full and useful life. It doesn't really depend on anyone else, does it? It only depends on your relationship with God. Isn't that what they're saying here? If I don't have a full and useful life, whose fault is it? It's mine. It's nobody else's. We know women who are unafraid, even happier these conditions. Here's another one. There are all these rules in these three paragraphs. Do not set your heart on reforming your husband. You may be unable to do so no matter how hard you try. And I think, I don't know anything about it, I shouldn't really say, but maybe when Al-Anon's hit bottom, it's when they see that they can't change their husband, right? They can only change themselves. They can't change other people. And alcoholics have to do the same thing. We all have the same disease. We know these suggestions are sometimes difficult to follow, but you may save many a heartbreak if you can succeed in observing them. Your husband may come to appreciate your reasonableness and patience. That would be great. This may lay the groundwork for a friendly talk about his alcoholic problem. So it says your behavior has to be convincing. And when we talk about at home, our behavior is more convincing than words. We have to practice love, patience, and tolerance towards the family. Well, you have to do the same thing towards the alcoholic. And then at some point, maybe they'll open up. Be sure you're not critical during this discussion. Attempt instead to put yourself in his place. And that's important too when you're working with other people. Let him see that you want to be helpful rather than critical. And that's hard. And that's page 77. We want to fit ourselves to be a maximum service to God and other people. When a discussion does arise, you might suggest he read this book, or at least the chapter on alcoholism. That's why they published this book, so people could read it and understand their disease, step one, what was required in step two, and then the decision in step three, and the program of action, and then how to pray and meditate and live in the now in step 10, 11, and then how to carry the message. Why would they want people to read the chapter on alcoholism? That's called More About Alcoholism. Because in More About Alcoholism, they describe the grave nature of our illness because our mind can't see the truth about the first drink. And page 43, it ends, no human power can relieve our alcoholism. Now, you might read that and say, well, what do they really mean? Well, no human power can relieve your alcoholism. You're screwed if you're going to rely on human power. And then guess what the next page is? We're going to talk about God. And as long as you think your power or somebody else's power is going to relieve your alcoholism, there's no hope. It has to come from God. Tell him you've been worried. You think he ought to know the subject better, as everyone should have a clear understanding of the risk he takes if he drinks too much. Show him you have confidence in his power to stop or moderate. Say you do not want to be a wet blanket. You only want him to take care of his health. Thus you may succeed in interesting him in alcoholism. And I think really they're talking about the solution. And he probably has several alcoholics among his own acquaintances. You might suggest he take an interest in them. Drinkers like to help other drinkers. Your husband may be willing to talk to one of them. And now we have people who have solved their problem who can come and talk, like Mickey talked about. That's where AA should be available. The hand of AA should be available. In this day and age, people are sent here for one reason or another. They come to a meeting, and we hope that when they come, they'll find something that, and people will grab them and start to interact with them so that they'll come back and talk about that we have a solution here. They said, if he doesn't want to get it in the next paragraph, you may try to help the wife. If you act upon these principles, your husband may stop or moderate. Suppose, however, that your husband fits the description number two. The same principles which apply to husband one should be practiced. But after his binge, ask him if he would really like to get over drinking for good. Remember, he says in the big book, don't go while he's on the binge. Wait till the binge is over, and then ask him if he wants to quit for good. And good means good, right? Dr. Bob would have them get down on their knees. Are you done? or you're completely done. And if they're not done, I can't make them be done. Do not ask that he do it for you or anyone else, just would he like to. Does anybody try to help people get done? We try to talk to them. We want them to get the message. And it's, you get just, you care and you want to help them, but you can't make somebody done. You know if somebody's done? You ask them, you give them a suggestion, see if they do it. And if they do it, that's good. And then give them another one. See if they do that one. Are they willing to go to any length? Are they done? And make them reasonable suggestions. Call you every day. That's a hard one for them to understand. Call you every day. And then when you call, just talk. Maybe give them an assignment, something to read, something to do. See if they do it. Tell them to come to a meeting. See if they're here. You see, we can't make them willing. The chances are he would. Show him your copy of this book and tell him what you found out. And this is where, when we work with others, right, how we're supposed to share our experience of what happened to us and what we did. Show him that as alcoholics, the writers of this book understand. Tell him in the interesting stories you have read, if you think he will be shy of a spiritual remedy, ask him to look at the chapter in alcoholism. Then perhaps he will be interested enough to continue. Why? Because he'll realize he's doomed and he will be taking the first step. I think I'll stop there. And there's a lot of information here. It's good stuff. And so we're going to pick up on 113 next week. And congratulations to Mickey, and left some time for some discussion. Thank you.